Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
We are back. I'm Father Matt Malone of America Magazine. I'm joined by Father Patty Gilger and Eloise Blondiot. And we had the social event of the Manhattan season this week here in New York with the Met Gala. And we are joined by our editor-at-large, Father Jim Martin. And Father Jim, you and Eloise both went to the Met Gala and saw this incredible exhibit. What was it about? What was it all about?
We did, and please call me Jim. So the gala was should be kept distinct from, or is kept distinct from, the exhibit. So the exhibit is called Heavenly Bodies, Catholic Imagination,
Fashion.
Fashion
and the Catholic Imagination.
And Eloise and I saw it early on, and it's basically, it was curated by Andrew Bolton, who's the curator in charge of the Costume Institute at the Met. And it looks at how religion and religious art have influenced Catholic designers, fashion designers. So it's basically, essentially, dresses that have taken their inspiration from religious art and religious imagery and even habits, religious order habits and cassocks and things like that, as well as a loan, a fairly sizable loan, from the Vatican's papal sacristy of papal tiaras. There are plural. I didn't realize that there was just one. So did Cardinal Dolan. He told me the other night. I thought there was just one, too. And so it's quite lovely. And then there was a press conference that we both went to, and then Eloise went to the Cloisters. You can talk about that, which is up uptown in Manhattan. And then in the evening was the gala, or gala, if you're from the UK, which was the kind of kickoff party. Right. I think what's interesting in the news is that I think people are confusing the gala with the exhibit. The gala is not the exhibit.
That's
the
exactly gala. What I just did.
Yeah. Well,
right. I mean, okay. I did not get an invite to the gala, but I definitely was at the exhibit. And the gala.
What about
is...
the gala?
I think she went to both.
That's
actually.
Right. She. That's right. She was invited, but she thought it was something different because of the accent.
No, yeah, but the gala and the gala was one night only. That was on Monday, and the exhibition opened on Monday to that special audience, and then will open to the public and will run until October, I believe. So for people like me who didn't quite make the celebrity guest list, you can go and enjoy the exhibit, and it is really spectacular.
And you know, the photos of the event, I did not attend the event, but I've seen the photographs of these costumes, which are really kind of amazing. And I should point out that both Jim and Eloise have pieces at americamagazine.org/Sirius. Eloise talks about why the Met Gala is a good thing for Catholicism, because it's been a little controversial.
A little.
And Jim, you have an interview with the curator of the exhibit, Heavenly Bodies. You know, I think that this is America Magazine's very first red carpet coverage.
That's hysterical. Well, you know, it's funny. I was disappointed to find out it was a white carpet, which was a huge letdown. And I didn't know how these things worked. You know, you wait in line, basically, and I was certainly not going to, you know, pause or linger. You know, it's ridiculous because it's for people wearing these, you know, great sort of spectacular fashion outfits. And I said to the guy, well, now what am I supposed to do? I don't want to. He said, just walk up. And I said, well, I don't want to walk in front of anybody because they're all getting their pictures taken. And that's, you literally walk past people who are just, it's the strangest thing, who are just stopped there,
right,
posing.
And they've taken about 6 months to prepare for
that
10-minute.
Yeah, and so it's just it's an unusual thing because on the one hand, I'm not used to people just sort of posing and being photographed like that. On the other hand, it seems incredibly rude to walk between the photographers and this, you know, $10 million dress or whatever.
Right.
So, yeah. But I was sad it wasn't an actual red carpet. Interestingly, behind me in the red carpet or the white carpet was Linda Carter from Wonder Woman.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Oh,
it was very nice.
Yeah.
She's very pleasant. And Jonah Hill was next to me.
Okay.
Both of them seemed a little surprised about a priest standing there. They were a little surprised.
Well, because a lot of the celebrity guests in attendance were wearing sort of clerical outfits. So some of them were in Roman collars. And obviously you were in your clerics.
Yes.
So not everyone knew that you were a real life priest.
Yes. Right. You know, and the other thing, Eloise and I were speaking on our video for America Media, that, you know, you have to take people where they are, and that's okay, and it's fine, and it's confusing for people. And I think most people felt a little confused by the whole evening. I should say, though, that the vast majority of the, I mean, the men usually were in tuxes or something that's a little more elaborate, but the women who had the kind of outlandish dresses like Rihanna and Sarah Jessica Parker.
She was wearing a bishop's mitre.
She was wearing a bishop's mitre.
Not the real thing.
Not the real thing.
An imitation.
An imitation. And Sarah Jessica Parker, who had basically a creche on her head.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. You know, that was in the minority. Most of the women's dresses were just very elegant, beautiful, long, with lots of trains.
Right. Lots of Marian imagery embroidered on people's dresses. And
The one interaction I had that night with Andrew Bolton, who's a lovely guy, and Jesuit educated, by the way.
The creator Stonyhurst,
the creator of the exhibit.
Oh, we went to Stonyhurst.
Oh, yeah, lovely guy. And he said, you know, how you're doing? I said, fine. I said, my biggest concern is actually stepping on one of these trains, because there were trains just sort of passing you by. And if you turned around.
Oh, trains from the dresses.
Yeah, exactly. And, and, you know, in a way that, you know, even when I don't go out to these big fancy parties a lot, but you don't generally don't see women wearing long trains. I mean, you know, 5-6 foot long trains. And he said, no, that's okay. He said, I step on them all the time. He said, you hear this little tear.
Oh, no.
And you step away.
Some of these gowns, you know, 1,200 hours of labor over them.
Well, I mean, some of them were, at least from the photographs, were exquisite.
Yeah.
And so when you were going in, they were asked, they usually ask on the carpet, who are you wearing?
Yeah.
And you said, like, Slip Inc.
Joseph A. Banks. Right. Actually, someone did ask
R.J. Toomey.
Someone did it.
This is a Rumi Toomey.
That's right. So I switched to Almy recently. We can get into that.
Okay.
No, someone did say that. They said, who are you wearing? And I said, I did this on purpose. This just shocked them. I said, Joseph A. Banks, 3 for $600. And they were not happy. They were a little appalled.
Right, exactly. So it was a little controversial in that some people questioned on social media whether this was irreverent or appropriate. Some of the costumes, you know, were pushing the envelope. But Eloise, you argued in your piece that this is really good for Catholicism. So why?
I think, well, from a personal perspective, I just saw all of my interests align in this spectacular. Who'd have thought? Once upon a time interned at British Vogue. I attended Divinity School.
Oh, you did? I did.
And now I work in Catholic media. So who'd have thought? A Met Gala.
This was made for you.
Themed on the Catholic imagination. So I was selfishly very, very excited.
Now, Eloise, let me interrupt for just one moment, because before I want to hear what you say about this event, but I really want to paint the picture for our listeners. What were you wearing, and where were you seated, and how were you engaging with these beautiful dresses in this unique perspective that you have?
So I had spent the whole day at the museum seeing the exhibit, and then I ran to the office. My coworkers were making fun of me because I've been talking about sneaking into the event for months.
And I asked them if I could bring Eloise as a plus one. They denied it. They denied my request.
Mr. Bolton, how could you?
Did you tell them she worked for British Vogue?
They said, Father, you know, the guest list is very tight. And yes. I said, all right, fine.
All right.
My America Magazine press card only gets me so far in the fashion world. I ran home, changed into my pajamas, was watching the red carpet, taking notes because I knew I had to write turn around this piece. And then halfway through, I thought, you know what? I have the dress.
Yes.
I have the dress I was going to wear to the Met Gala, and I put it on, was working on my piece while watching the red carpet, turned it in the next day. I thought, you know what? I only live once. I'm never going to wear this dress again. It was embroidered with crosses and beading. And it was quite something.
Yeah. So what was it that you saw that made you say, actually, you know, this is good for us. This helps either us, our self-understanding as Catholics, or helps the public's understanding?
Well, I think just the fact that this theme was chosen, mm-hmm. I think says a lot. I can't imagine, 15 years ago, there was nothing less fashionable than religion. Mm. New atheism was really rearing its head. The Catholic Church was going through and is still going through a crisis, and is often only spoken about in relation to the sex abuse crisis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now in 2018, to have the Catholic imagination chosen as a theme for a lot of different people, Catholics, non-Catholics, believers, non-believers, people of many different faith traditions, actually engaging with the church in a broader way is really, I think, interesting and exciting, and it's promising in a climate that right now we're talking a lot about how polarized people are and how people tend to keep to their own camps and not get out of their bubbles, only talk to people who they know or do things that they're comfortable with. This was a great example of Catholics being able to express their faith, but also people being able to familiarize themselves with the church in a low pressure setting.
So you're sort of like a subtle evangelization happening.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Interesting.
When you write in your piece here that it's the proximity of the vestments that are there in the exhibit itself and the haute couture fashion that serves, as you say, as an invitation for reverence. Like, can you say a little bit about what this invitation for reverence is and how this might be an entry point to the possibility of belief or faith and what that might have to do with the Catholic imagination itself?
Yeah, I will say, first off, I think the exhibit was really, really wonderfully done. And it was such a stunning feat that Andrew Bolton, the curator, was able to even get those loans from the Vatican of these papal tiaras, which have never been, some which have never, ever been seen before. But actually, I would have preferred those objects to be in closer proximity with the fashion because they were actually separated. They're on different floors. And I think that was very deferential and very thoughtful kind of anticipation of what some Catholics might be offended by putting those objects together and what that might say about how we respect sacred objects versus kind of fashion objects. But actually, I think putting them together would have done both a service because I think it's a reminder that the categories of the secular and the religious aren't as separate as we often like to think. And, you know, those are both objects that people have made in an attempt to get at the religious. Mm. And I think that's something to be celebrated.
So if they were side by side, you might more easily trace visually the trajectory between the one to the other. Yeah. Now, these secular designs, are they actually things that are or have been worn by people, or are they a kind of conceptual designs?
No, they were. And I want to add one more thing to what Eloise said so well. Not only was it an opportunity for sort of culture to engage the church, but the church engaged culture in putting its stamp of approval on it. I want to give a big praise to Cardinal Dolan, who was very helpful in the arrangement of the exhibit, but also showed up at the press conference, gave a beautiful, which is online, beautiful summary of, you know, what he said, the true, the good, and the beautiful.
That's right.
And then he said, and we have a name for the true, the good, and the beautiful, which is Jesus Christ, which was lovely. And then at the event in the evening, he introduced the Sistine Chapel Choir. So it was terrific. I mean, so the church was really there. But to your point, it's kind of a mix, Matt. They are regular couture dresses that people would wear that were sort of, for example, loosely modeled on cassocks and things like that. And there were certain fashion, different years people would kind of display this, you know, in their fashion shows. But also they had, which I didn't even know existed, they had designers who had done gowns for statues of the Blessed Mother.
Oh. Wow.
You know how so you would dress like the Infant of Prague and things like that?
Right.
So life-size statues by like Balenciaga and Galliano for statues of the Blessed Mother in these different churches in Europe, which were fascinating.
That's amazing.
So you had that. You had the regular couture things. You had the and then sort of, you know, just kind of little bit outlandish gowns, but most of it's stuff that women would wear. I don't think there were any men's fashion there.
No. There were at the cloisters a few men's pieces, but it was predominantly women's fashion.
Well, there was John Paul's cassock, right?
Yeah, that was amazing. I was surprised at two things. One, that they had gotten the theologian David Tracy,
amazing,
to write for the catalog, and two, that they had gotten, as Eloise was saying, so much stuff from the papal sacristy. And also, by the way, they ended up getting a sort of imprimatur, not a real imprimatur, from Cardinal Rovasi,
right,
who's the prefect of the Pontifical Council for Culture. So, you know, there's a
they
real...
They were really making an effort to build a bridge.
They really did, yeah. And when I went in early on, they said to me, who should we talk to? And I said, well, you know, the point guy is Cardinal Rovasi.
Yeah.
And I contacted a mutual friend of all of ours, Bishop Paul Tai, who's the secretary. And this is a funny story, actually. I think I've told you, Matt, this privately. So I said, well, I happen to know, I don't know too many people in the Vatican, but I happen to know this Bishop Paul Tai, who's terrific. He's the secretary for Cardinal Rovasi. I'll call him. So I called Paul Tai, and he said, funny enough, I'm coming to New York next week. And I said, oh, let me put you in touch with them via email. So within about 3 hours, he said to the people at the Met, I'm flying over to see you. And they emailed me and said, thank you so much. So I told a Jesuit friend, I said, I have a feeling they think that I called Bishop Tai and said, you know, please fly over.
You and know, they still wouldn't give you a second ticket?
So I said to this Jesuit friend, I said, I have a feeling they think I called Bishop Tai and said, fly over. You know, and he dropped everything. And this Jesuit friend said, typically, let them think that.
Right. How very
political.
But no,
so Rovasi ended up having kind of an opening, I guess, with Anna Wintour in Rome.
Yeah.
It was terrific. I mean, I was so happy to see the church embrace this and not be afraid of it, even with the, you know, the kind of craziness at the Met Gala. They weren't afraid to meet people where they are. And
yeah,
that's where they were, you know, they're at the Met.
I mentioned that Cardinal Dolan was wearing Gamarelli.
Is he think?
Really?
I don't know.
He must
have
been.
I think a Cardinal would probably
without,
go to Gamarelli's.
Without breaking any confidences, he was incredibly gracious to me, and I will say, I'm not going to say what he said, but sitting next to him during the performance, very funny. I had not realized how funny and clever he is. He was also gracious to everybody he met.
Sure. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, over the break about the controversy that has surrounded this, and Petty, I thought you had an interesting observation about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we ought to take these, you know, the idea of there being controversy around this seriously in a couple of ways, at least to think about it. Like, what's really going on here? What are some of the concerns? A couple of them pop into my mind that we might just want to bring up and discuss a little bit. The first one being that this is an event for the elite of the elite, you know, the height of celebrity culture and only the very wealthy. We couldn't even get a second ticket for Eloise to go to the show.
Right.
And some of these
1% of the 1%.
Exactly. And some of these dresses, you know, and the costuming there is so expensive. And so in some ways, in the Church of Pope Francis, who is so devoted to the poor, how are we as a church being consistent with our priorities while supporting something like this? So that's one question there. Another one that we might want to think about in some ways is that a lot of the people wearing this religious garb are themselves committed to, in no way, shape, or form, to Christian teaching. Mm-hmm. And so there is or ought to be some kind of tie between beauty and truth.
Yeah.
How do we tie those things together? And is this a beginning for this, or is this a problem that is really just sacrilegious in some way?
Can I take the first one? The first one, I think you could say, you could make that argument for any Catholic fundraiser.
Yeah, fair point.
I mean, any Georgetown University, Boston College, Fordham. I mean, we should like sort of accuse ourselves. We have lots of fundraisers, you know, and they're to raise money, basically. And that's generally, I mean, as you know, obviously the wealthier people. And I think, you know, it's the both and. The Catholic Church is both, and this was actually not even a Catholic fundraiser. This was a Met fundraiser. The Catholic Church is both, you know, people who are wealthy and who are benefactors and donors and philanthropists, and people who work in the slums and, you know, with poor people. So I think it's kind of always been that way. I think the key would be for me that it was raising money for something. And that didn't bother me as much. I think that people who were getting upset about that would have been fine, I mean, if it were, you know, a Catholic university.
Yeah.
So I think it's just, there was something about the fact that celebrities were involved, I think, which is the kind of added gloss that I think that bothered people, maybe more than the fact that it was wealthy people. So, but it is, it's a reasonable concern.
Sure.
It's not something we should like dismiss, but I looked at it more from the fundraising point of view. Yeah.
And there is a way in which I think it reflects the ethos of Francis in that Francis has this kind of fearlessness about his own evangelization, right? That there's no quarter of the world or of the culture in which we should be afraid to be and to be present and to meet people where they are. And so, yes, he does have a preferential option, as there is in Catholic social teaching and in the gospel, for the poor and the disempowered. But at the same time, there is this sense that, you know, there shouldn't be any place where we can't go, and in whatever way, directly, indirectly, culturally, socially, politically, testify to that, to the power of the gospel.
And I also think the fact that this was clothes, this was fashion, made people suspicious in a way that they would not be suspicious if we were talking about art, for example. Even though this is an art form, these are not clothes you get to wear every day. These are, people have labored over these garments for, you know, as I said before, sometimes up to 1,200 hours. Mm. These are not everyday clothes. They're not to serve necessarily conventional standards of beauty, as Jim can attest. Some of them are. Some of the outfits worn were pretty,
ridiculous.
Pretty crazy.
To use a fashion term.
Pretty crazy. But I think there is a tendency to kind of dismiss fashion over art as kind of more frivolous.
Well, and one of the things that comes out in the exhibit, which I really hope that people see, and again, it's distinct from the kind of some of the silliness of the show or the gala, is that these fashion designers are religious people. Most of them were either raised Catholic or, you know, or still are Catholic. And I was thinking, you know, the same way that I would kind of give an artist a wide berth, you know, say an abstract artist, right, who is trying to do something religious, you give these fashion designers a wide berth. This is their way, in their world, of expressing their own devotion or their celebration of something that is meaningful to them. And I think, also, I think, you know, it's an interesting question, Patty. I think so much of this, and I was the when the Met said, you know, what's going to be offensive, I said, look, first of all, this is entirely subjective, right? And so one man's offensive outfit is another man's or another woman's, you know, beautiful creation, you know. So to look at a lot of these, to look at a lot of these designs and say, look, I give these people the benefit of the doubt. Something that I might think is just, wow, that's too much. This might have been something that he or she really wanted to express. And this icon has been so important to me in my life. I'm going to stitch it on a dress. And and that sort of stretched me a little bit, because things that I would think would be bizarre, when I read about the designers and where they came from, like, wow, that's their way of expressing their celebration of this particular icon.
I would also say that there's something interesting about it, because in that, you know, so much of liturgical and clerical dress is itself an appropriation from pagan culture.
Perfect.
Right? I mean, the chasuble is the cloak of a Roman senator. Right, and it which has been appropriated by Christians and then brought into the liturgical experience, and so there's now this kind of exchange happening in the reverse. That interesting opportunity for dialogue, I think, about how the church engages culture.
Well, and also the irony in terms of all the man hours and woman hours that are spent on these garments. We saw in the part where they were displaying the papal vestments, there was this huge cope from Pius XII or something. And they said, believe it or not, at the press conference, that it took 50 women 16 years to do this. Nuns, I think.
Sure.
And so the same people that might have a problem with the dresses that are elaborate would probably go to the Vatican Museums and just ooh and awe over this, you know, incredible fabric, or maybe not. But it's you know, we participate in that too. And it's just different ways of giving glory to God, I think. Not everybody can afford all those clothes, though.
Right. And they're just going back to those kind of accusations or worries about cultural appropriation, I would say that Catholics are in a very unique and privileged position, because we have so many representations of our faith and traditions and cultures to choose from. And this is something I wrote in my piece, but for every kind of poor engagement with the faith, we have like 5,000 other great engagements with the faith that we can turn to. And the consequences of being misrepresented as Catholics are far less dire than with other groups and faith traditions.
And it's also interesting that, I mean, the Metropolitan Museum has an enormous collection of religious art and religious artifacts. I took my ordination retreat in Valladolid, Spain, and I went into the cathedral each day to pray, and I saw these enormous hooks hanging on the walls of the cathedral. And it dawned on me after about a week of doing this that this is where the gate, the screen hung in the cathedral, which now is in the Metropolitan Museum.
Oh, right. Exactly. Oh, that one.
Exactly.
Right?
That's fascinating.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
But how did they get the gate from the... That's amazing.
I have no idea. Probably something... Probably something to do with some revolution somewhere.
That, but, right, that's right.
But I thought it was interesting that the hinges were still there, as if they were waiting for it to come back.
Wow. That's right? Fascinating.
So maybe... I don't know. Maybe that's a symbol or metaphor for this whole cultural exchange.
And funny enough, yeah, that's where the main sort of exhibit is. That's where most of the dresses are.
Oh, it is.
In front of that, in the medieval wing, in front of that huge screen. And funny enough, which I didn't think they were going to do this, if you look in that wing, I think it's just called the medieval wing, there's a huge icon of Christ Pantocrator, right? Christ the ruler of the world. And in front of it are these like 10 mannequins, and it's as if they're in a choir, mm-hmm. Perched up. It's very sensitive. I was surprised at how and touched by how diligent they were in being sensitive to Catholic sensibilities. I mean, they really worked hard on this, and it's really thoughtful.
And I think they were also asking questions that Catholics should be asking and can ask, as well as non-Catholics. Actually, this was something that occurred to me in the cloisters, where one particular exhibit really stood out to me. There was a mannequin with a very beautiful wedding dress on, and the mannequin was positioned towards the crucifix as if in prayer. And I thought it really drew attention to how this art form can be devotional.
Right.
And I think that is what the church asks artists to do, is to ask us to question our role on this earth and to shed light on our paths and destinies.
This is related to one of the things that you mentioned that Cardinal Dolan said too. In his address, he mentioned von Balthasar's concept of beauty, goodness, and truth. So look, one of the real criticisms that we've been concerned about, or that we may be concerned about, is to what extent is this expression of beauty just appropriation, or to what extent can it lead towards something like worship? And von Balthasar's categories that Dolan mentions are really, really important for us to think about this, because what he says is that beauty itself can be a trajectory towards truth, but it's that it's in the unity of beauty and goodness and truth that we see really the figure of Christ.
Right.
So the question then becomes, where do we begin versus where do we end?
Right.
And I think this is a very Jesuit question in some ways. And so why is it that we're so willing to be able to go into all of these spaces, as you mentioned about Pope Francis?
Yep.
We are unafraid to go into any place precisely for one precise reason. It's because God incarnates God's self everywhere.
Right. Mm.
We go into those spaces and help that incarnation blossom more fully.
Right.
And now that beginning can begin through goodness, that works of mercy, or it can begin through the pursuit of truth. Philosophy can lead people to God, or it can begin through beauty.
Right.
It's the question of whether those things are being brought together. And in this event, can we celebrate the possible beginning of a journey towards that unity from beauty?
Right. And can we say that that in order to have this event and in order for it to be worthwhile, that process doesn't have to be completed in this evening.
Right.
When is it ever complete?
But it's a part of the process.
Exactly, Eloise. Exactly. Right?
Because
it's
these are precisely they're transcendentals.
Yes.
They're transcendent, right? They
and the beginning might be someone at the exhibit saying, wow, there's Cardinal Dolan, wow, he's pretty open to this. Maybe the Catholic Church isn't so bad. I mean, they're on just a very basic level of engagement, isn't that great? I think a little more about him now, and I think a little more about the church and opening people up. I think just to be there, I think the ministry of presence, I think, is very important.
You never know how it's going to happen.
No, exactly.
Right? You never know. Well, it's how long is this exhibit going to run?
6 months. So from now until October.
September.
Okay. October, yeah.
So Eloise is going to be there every day.
I will. In her dress.
And we should say it's both at the Met on Fifth Avenue and up at the Cloisters.
Fantastic. Well, Father Jim, thanks for being with us. And you can find his interview with the curator of this incredible exhibit at americamagazine.org. And you can also find Eloise Blondio's article about why this is actually good for Catholicism, also at americamagazine.org/Sirius. You can find all of the content we were talking about today, and you can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. And to subscribe to America, call 1-800-627-9533 That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. For Patty Gilger and Eloise Blondio, I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.